See how you were paying attention this morning. There are some things that happen in the scripture reading sometime that should make us go, why? Like, Moses has come down the mountain receiving the Ten Commandments. He's instructed to have the people prepare themselves for 3 days and then gather around the base of the mountain. He sets up an altar, 12 pillars to represent the 12 tribes of Israel, and then sends some young men who are basically priests to go and do what? With a whole bunch of bulls. Sacrifice them. Why? Then even stranger, they collect the blood in some vessels. Why? What's the connection with blood in the Old Testament and in the New, really? Like, let me try it this way. If I were to take one of you and string you up by your ankles and drain you of your blood, what would happen to you? You'd die. We can't live without blood. Old Testament, there was a commandment. People were never to consume the blood of an animal. Why? Because the blood is the life, and the life belongs to God. So what they're doing in the sealing of the Old Testament Mosaic covenant and taking that blood, some of it gets poured out on the altar as a sign that is being offered to God, and the rest of it gets sprinkled on all of the people. Why? They're being brought into the life of the Mosaic covenant and purified of their sinfulness. Okay, there's one thing. What else comes in there? This should have seemed odd to us. The apostles, they're on their way into Jerusalem for the Passover, and some of the guys go, hey, where do you want us to do this Passover supper meal for you? Why didn't you just say go to 2715 Horseman Creek Road? It's the place to be, right? In case you don't know, that's our address. Why didn't you just say that? Why this cryptic thing of look for a guy going into town carrying a big jar of water and follow him? Why? What needs to happen and what would get obstructed if this one particular apostle knew where they were going to go? Judas, who has already made a deal with the chief priests and Pharisees in the Sanhedrin to turn him over to them. If Judas knew that, what would have not happened? The Last Supper. So why is that a big deal? I mean, these things are all woven in and tied together. It's like one big, huge tapestry. What happens at the Last Supper? And why does it matter? Hebrews helps to give us some clues, because what Jesus is going to do from the Last Supper, through his arrest, through his crucifixion, through his resurrection and ascension, is to take the entire Passover that they've been celebrating since Moses and transform it and elevate it to what we're doing here. It was necessary to be able to take the bread and say, this is my body, and then the blood, or the wine, and say, this is my blood, before going to Calvary, because that's where he takes that and empowers it. And then what does he do after the resurrection? Remember, the blood gets poured out on the altar. That happens with the Passover lambs, too. You know, they're sacrificing some 10, 15,000 lambs on Passover, and all of that blood gets poured out on the altar because it's being offered to God on the people's behalf. What's Jesus going to do? He's going to take his own blood into heaven, into the heavenly temple, and offer it for all time before God. And the Last Supper is what takes and connects us to this. It literally makes sacramentally present for us that self-sacrifice of Jesus and our participation in it through our reception of him in the body and blood of Christ. Remember, it's the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ. That's exactly what Jesus says specifically during the Last Supper. He was not talking metaphorically, symbolically, spiritually, allegorically. He meant specifically, exactly, this is my body, this is my blood. And that's what the church's belief has been since the year 33 AD. From the very moment the words of consecration are spoken over the elements of bread and wine on the altar, there is no longer any bread on the altar. There is no longer any wine on the altar. It is now the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ. That has been our belief as Catholics since the Last Supper. So, where does that leave us? You know, this feast day solemnity was established back in the mid-13th century at the behest, the action of St. Thomas Aquinas. And explained some by another saint, St. Bonaventure, Franciscan, who is a contemporary of St. Thomas Aquinas in the 13th century. And he's writing about it, trying to explain it for those who are learning from him why this matters, why what we believe about this matters. And it needs to interrogate us to what do we believe as we come forward to participate in and then receive. There is a letter he draws from. It's St. Paul's first letter to the church in Corinth. If you want to go when you get home, go to chapter 11, starting at verse 27. If we fail to discern the body and blood of Christ in the Eucharist, are we receiving a blessing or a curse? That wasn't a rhetorical question. Literally, what does St. Paul mean to convey? If we fail to believe, to put our faith that this really is Jesus' body, blood, soul, and divinity in the Eucharist, are we bringing down a blessing upon ourselves or a condemnation? A or B? Hint, it's not A. We literally are bringing a condemnation upon ourselves for receiving the Eucharist without believing that's what it is. It's literally that serious. We're trying to give you clues. Have you ever watched a priest up celebrating the Mass? What he's doing? Every time he's handled the host after it's consecrated, what do we do? Do we do this? Have you ever paid attention to what we're doing up here? What do we do after we've handled the consecrated host? We do this over the chalice just in case what? There are any particles of that host we just consecrated clinging to our fingers, and we don't just brush it off, because every single tiny little particle of that consecrated host is, you know, the four-part litany, the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ. We're telling you something every time we do that. At the end of Mass, after communion is over, you ever watch what we do with the one square cloth that's on the middle of the altar? Do we just take it off and shake it off and put it over on the table? You ever wonder why we do this? Literally folding everything into the middle? Because there may have been particles of that consecrated host that fell off on, it's called the corporal, during Mass. And you don't just shake it off, because every last particle is soul and divinity of Christ. You ever watch the deacon and I with the chalice after communion? We just go to the sink and rinse it out and pour it down the drain? No. Because there still might be some of the precious blood in that chalice, and is rinsed out thoroughly and then consumed. Because every last single tiny little drop is the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ. And it must be treated with the most absolute, utter reverence and respect. Now, if we have to do that, what about you? Do our actions reveal something? Are we showing the world, and even maybe ourselves if we're paying attention, where our faith is in the Eucharist? Remember Paul? If we receive without discerning that we're receiving Christ, we're not bringing a blessing, we're bringing a condemnation. Do our actions reveal something about us, our faith? This happens daily Mass and every Sunday. There are those who come wandering in, sometimes after the gospel. What are you saying? Now, I know there are things that can happen that can make it delayed to get here because, you know, you never know what traffic is going to be. Sometimes Junior's being a little bit uncooperative. But when it happens Sunday after Sunday after Sunday after Sunday, what does that say? It's not saying that your faith is strong and lively. Then it always happens, again, this is Sunday and daily Mass too, people treat their communion line like the drive-thru window at McDonald's. What do I mean by that? They come forward, get their host, and they're munching on Jesus up the aisle, out the door, out of the narthex, out to the parking lot. What does that say? Is that saying you really have a firm faith that you have just received Jesus in the Eucharist? Does it? If you have either of those habits, and some people have both of them put together, they come as late as they can and leave the door as quickly as they can. Wow. That is showing an utter, total disrespect for Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament. Here's a hint. Stop. Receiving unworthily is not a spiritually healthy or smart thing to do. Ask God for the grace to bring you to conversion. Ask Him to help you have a truly living faith in Jesus in the Eucharist, and don't profane it by your actions. How we receive matters too. One of the things I never ever want to see for the rest of my life again, reaching out and grabbing the Eucharist from the communion minister, be it the deacon or one of the others, because what are you saying? You're not saying anything good. I see some people go, would you please give me that so I can go sit down? Again, what's that saying? Do not profane the Eucharist. If your faith is in a state of imperfection, God would deeply, profoundly love to help take your faith wherever it is right now and raise it up and intensify it so that you can receive the full benefits of receiving Him. There are a number of profound blessings that come from receiving communion with faith and worthily. It's your source of grace to help you to live your faith out there. It's the medicine for eternity. It's meant to help you get from this life into eternal life. And a couple of things that people maybe not be aware of. To receive the Eucharist in a state of grace with faith purifies you of your venial sins. You know, if we start every Mass with what's called the penitential rite, I confess to God, and you, my brothers and sisters, notice usually there's a little bit of a pause in there. That's to give you a chance to think of, okay, what venial sins did I come in here with this week, since I was here last week? Because they will be forgiven by that reception of the Eucharist. Not mortal sins. If you come with mortal sin, you need to go someplace else first, right? Right? I'm going to wait for 100% agreement here. Yeah. You need to go to confession. But your venial sins, received the Eucharist with faith, wipe away those venial sins. And worthily and faithfully received gift of Jesus in the Eucharist will also help you to avoid committing mortal sins. That's how much power is in that sacrament and more. So, what do you think I'm trying to get across? If you think throughout the entirety of the Old Testament, all that God has been doing since Adam and Eve, through the incarnation, through the crucifixion, through the resurrection and ascension of Jesus into heaven, and him taking his own sacrifice into heaven and enable us to participate in it, is all being given to you for your life, for a spiritual well-being, and to help you to be ready to meet God face to face. If your faith isn't there yet, ask for it. If you're obstinate and don't want to believe in it, then do yourself a favor, do your soul a favor. Don't receive communion again until you do. Do not receive condemnation upon yourself, but receive him worthily and faithfully. And again, if you're not there, God is eager to jump in and help you to get there, because he wants you to get there.